Fourth and final hour, Darren, Donnick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Right now, it's just Darren. That's me. Darren McFarland here. Willie Donnick has had to step away for the day, so he will not be here the final hour. Chase will be back on the show tomorrow. I guess extended vacation. Last week wasn't good enough. Took another day. I guess he'll be back tomorrow. Not sure. He claims he will be. By the way, don't miss a second of the action as the Predators return this Sunday. I've been telling you that. Game one against the Arizona Coyotes. You can watch the viewing party destinations, including Burger Republic and Party Foul. That's where they're going to have watch parties for the Preds and the Coyotes. Stop by Burger Republic in Lenox Village or in Mount Juliet and enjoy a Fours Burger for a limited time and $4 Happen Harry pints. So there you go. Good stuff. By the way, Burger Republic, very good. Not sure about the Fours Burger. I'm not sure I've had that, but see what they did there. Good stuff. Jeremy Kagover, friend of the show, been working with for a long time the Predators broadcast. He's been writing great stuff on our website for many, many years, and it was the sad reality over the weekend to see your tweet and your Facebook post of the picture. While it was cool, it was just the sad reminder that that was it for you in covering the Predators in the arena on Saturday before they would board the plane yesterday and head to Edmonton. But a nice parting gift from the media relations department to you, a bobblehead of you, Jeremy.
It was a tremendous gesture, Darren, and I'm very thankful for that. I'm very thankful for my 10 years being able to cover this team. Not done quite yet. I've got a few things coming up on thegamenashville.com here starting tomorrow and then throughout the week. And, of course, I'll have all the coverage and stuff on thegamenashville.com throughout, hopefully until September or through September. It was my last in-person Preds event.
Right.
Obviously, because there's no regular season to finish. There's no playoffs to go to, unfortunately. And the plan, for those of you who may follow me on Twitter, you know that the plan was for me to go to Edmonton. I was going to go to Edmonton because it was my last go-round. I didn't want the COVID pandemic to ruin my swan song, if you will. And so I was like, all right, I'm gonna front the money, and I'm going to go to Edmonton, and I'm going to find an Airbnb, and I'm going to go to these games and sit in the stands that are going to be empty if I can get credentialed and all that. And I was assured about 2 weeks ago or so by a couple of different sources that local media, if they were in town, would be allowed in the arena. But then reality hit that there may be some border issues. Like, is Canada going to let an American reporter into the country, and if they're not on the list? And then there's the then word came out that the NHL, if the owner of a team was not on the list of bubble personnel for each team, they may not be allowed in the arena to watch any of the games. And that was the last nail in the coffin, if you will. That was when I decided, okay, I'm not going to waste all this money that my family, quite frankly, doesn't have. That's why one of the reasons I'm stepping out of media to begin with. It's a lot of it is up front, out of your own pocket. And so I just decided there's no way I'm going to battle this possible border issue and then get up there and not be able to do anything. Right? I want to be able to bring people the coverage that they can't get. And I thought a really unique look, even though there wouldn't be any in-person player interviews or anything like that, I thought it would be a really unique vantage point to be able to report on what it's like inside these empty arenas for these games. But with all of the trouble issues and all that stuff kind of floating around as question marks, I was not willing to pony up $2,000 or $3,000 to make it happen. So unfortunately, my last in-person Preds event was Saturday, and the Preds Media Relations Department was nice enough to custom make a bobblehead for me. Very highly detailed. My Basset Hound pin that I've worn for the past 2 years was on there. My recorder, the model of my recorder was correct. Apparently, when I interview players in the locker room, I have my hand in my pocket, so that was on there. It was just really, really great, so I cannot thank them enough.
Yeah, so you were pleased with the bobblehead?
Very, very, very. It's funny, of the 90 I own, that is easily my favorite.
Yeah, your wife did post some pictures like, oh, great, yeah, just a bobblehead. Wow, that's something new in the Grover household. A bobblehead. Oh, wait a minute. Let's look at the whole wall of bobbleheads. You can't choose that.
That's
one.
Right.
Your favorite bobblehead is what?
Without that one?
Yeah, we're excluding that one because that one, yeah. Give me your favorite.
That's a great question. I have...
And a loaded one. I'm asking you to pick a favorite of probably many.
I know. I'm going to have to say my George Washington one. It's built... Oh, no, I take that back. My John Wayne one. I have a John... It's tall. It's like one of those really tall, well-made ones. It's like probably, I don't know, 8 inches tall. He's got a huge wide-brim cowboy hat on, and he's carrying a gun over his shoulder. I would say that one. I'd say John Wayne.
All right. That's not where I thought you would go. Very, very interesting. Let's talk about this series that's going to get cranked up. In fact, that's
yes.
The Sunday action will start with the Predators and the Coyotes game one. One, just let me – we had Scott Burnside on last hour talking about the weird situation in Arizona with their young GM out, quit, resigned, fired, whatever happened. I mean, nobody's really said he's fired, but look, it clearly there was – you know, he was doing stuff they didn't agree with, and they wanted him out, and clearly he was looking to get out. So Steve Sullivan, former Predator, is the interim GM. Do you think that affects them at all? Does that have any bearing whatsoever on this series, in your opinion?
We talked about this, actually, at Saturday's camp session, just real briefly, that I don't think it does. Because, first of all, you don't have time for any of that distraction if you're a team, because you have a best of five series to win, and if you don't win, your season is done. All of this preparation and mental taxation and being away from your family and making that tough decision, all that all goes away in the blink of an eye if you don't win this best of five series. So I don't think you have any time for that. But I think even more so is that we have to remember that, one, this is not a GM, not a coach. That's number one. But number two, it's – how do I say this? The media is not going to be in the locker room at morning skate and at games and on days off and at practices asking every player in the room the same question, which is about the GM situation or about, you know, Steve Sullivan or whatever the case is. Because media is resorted, unfortunately, as I mentioned in my last answer by Edmonton, resorted to Zoom calls. And there's only three or four players per day, maybe even less depending on the games or the situation, that are going to be subjected to those Zoom calls. And so there's not going to be this bombardment of distraction put into the room by the media, which is where a lot of the distraction comes from. That's number one. And number two is, you know, I just think that this team, meaning the Coyotes, they have so much going for them already. I mean, with the Taylor Hall situation, like, if anything, that's the distraction. I understand that the GM position is obviously – you know, it's a part of that because he's got to sign the next player or whatever. But I just think the Taylor Hall, what he's going to do past this next 2 weeks or whatever the case is. Phil Kessel struggled this year, and that was a big-time acquisition for the Coyotes. You know, can he rebound? Can he use the break, the pause, you know, like we hope Pecorine can and other Brian Johansson can, and really be like, okay, that part's behind me. I've had 4 months off. Let's, you know, these games matter. Let's go, right? And then Phil Kessel returns to his 30, 40-goal self. So there's a lot more questions in that Coyotes locker room, I think, than this GM issue. Like, yes, it's unorthodox. You don't ever hear an NHL source come out and be like, he's a liar and a quitter. Like, that's pretty abrasive, you know? I mean, I don't think since the Dallas Stars situation with their leadership and Sagan and Ben, I don't think we've heard that. And so, you know, but again, I think it's the lack of media presence in the locker room, the lack of media presence in the bubble, which is zero, by the way, that will help not make it a distraction for the Coyotes.
NHL has moved into phase four now that these teams have arrived to their hub cities, and the NHL reported today that phase three, as they tested over 800 players, that they came away with zero positive tests. So very, very good sign, as Major League Baseball is making the headlines today for all the wrong reasons with positive tests, that the NHL is going into their phase four and their exhibition games this week, where each team is going to get one exhibition game, and then everything gets cranked up on Saturday, going in with zero positive tests. So going into the controlled environment. So you have to feel good right now where the league is.
Okay, so I do feel good about where the league is, and I definitely feel great about where the league is compared to Major League Baseball. Now, that being said, let me preface this by saying I'm not a doctor, and I'm also not up on all of the things that have to do with COVID because, one, they're fluid, and two, because it's just too much to keep up with. And I've got a ton going on here at home and in my jobs and all that stuff. My wife's a teacher. I mean, she just got word, I think, a week ago that she, you know, we'll have a school year start on time. It just won't be the same. You know, cause we were worried about that. Like, well, is she going to have a paycheck if the school district decides they're not going to have school in August? I mean, all this stuff, right? So I preface it by saying I'm not a doctor and I'm not up on all this stuff. But I will say that my immediate reaction to that is let's wait until they get in the bubble. And then 2 weeks from now, which is my understanding, again, as a non-doctor, that is what COVID is carried for that long. So let's get 2 weeks in, and then we'll see where they're at. Because there can be no positive tests right now all they want. And that's great. I mean, it's tremendous. Better than 500 positive tests. But also, I understand that people can carry without showing symptoms or asymptomatic or whatever the term is. And so, therefore, let's just get in the bubble where they're isolated and ready to go. And then 2 weeks from now, I will make a judgment call on that. About the exhibition game, though, Darren, I do want to say this. This also came up at Saturday's camp. Is that they're playing the Dallas Stars on Thursday, and we saw an incident with Corey Perry at the Winter Classic, and I'm certainly not predicting that again. I'm just saying that I do wonder what's going to happen in the exhibition game because, you know, yes, both teams are going to try to get out of it healthy and all that, but and it's their one time to get their legs under them against the opponent to stop themselves before there's, you know, live ammo, if you will. But I do wonder about – I do have trepidations about that game. I do wonder what that matchup is going to bring on that one night.
Well, I suspect, and I can actually broaden this out even more and expand on it a little bit. I wonder, at least early on in these games over the weekend and these qualifying rounds, I do wonder if – while everybody is, let's just say there's no positive test and everybody's, you know, in their controlled environment, everybody feels good, safe and sound where they are, I do wonder, they're still human beings and they have a brain and they have, you know, a mind and they can think of things and it may be in the back of their mind and they've pushed it to the back of their mind, but I do wonder if it will look a little different or once the puck is dropped, it's just, you know, instincts take over and they become professional hockey players and all that other stuff doesn't matter anymore. Like, I do wonder if there is going to be, and I know playoffs, you know, obviously fights really don't happen much. You know, there's a lot of pushing and shoving. Obviously it gets nastier, big. Is that change a little bit? It gets, you know, a lot of these series get, you know, can get nasty in the playoffs. You're playing, you know, one opponent, you're seeing each other every other day, or in this case, you may see them back-to-back days. Does it get nasty, like a lot of times, or do they back off? Is there a little hesitation because they're humans, or is just instincts take over? I will be curious to see how that plays out starting this weekend.
Yeah, me too. I'm a big fan of the intensity, obviously. I think we all are, of playoff hockey, for sure. But you know, I do think that that's the one kind of saving grace, I think, for Predators fans when they think of Corey Perry in a game that doesn't mean anything right before, oh, I don't know, the biggest time of the season. You know, I think it's the one saving grace is that both teams are going to try to get out of that healthy so they can set themselves up for success going forward. And so, but I do wonder, and I'm very curious exactly what you said, to see where the physicality is. And the laziness, for that matter. I mean, there may be an element of, you know, just human nature. You got two or three guys per team or whatever that, you know, think, oh, this is an exhibition game. Let's just get through healthy, whatever. They play with some reservations, if you will. Maybe it's not even their fault, but they just do. And then, you know, how will that come into play? Will there be lazy penalties? Will there be something that's reckless? You know, all those things. And I do wonder who's going to be ready from the get-go. From the camp sessions that I've seen, Rocco Grimaldi, Mikael Granlund, and, of course, Roman Josi, look like they are men on a mission from the camp sessions that I've seen. So those three guys, has nothing to do with physicality, of course, necessarily, but they have their legs moving. They're in mid-season form, ready to ramp up and ready to go. In my opinion, it's the other guys, the other 23 or whatever the number is, that, you know, I'm very curious to see how that first exhibition game goes. And then are they going to be ready to go in game one? Then, or is it going to take until game two? Will it take a shift? Will it take a half a period? Will it take a full period? Like, what's it going to take to get everybody back to where everyone's dialed in, their feet are under them, they're going like it's mid-season form or mid-playoff form for that matter, and they're all just dialed in, ready to go.
Speaking with Jeremy K. Gover, you can find his work at thegamenashville.com and, of course, part of our Predators broadcast on the radio side of things in his final year. And we've certainly appreciated everything he's done. It's been great working with Jeremy. It's not over yet, but I just wanted to pass that along because I know this is a little bit special. I hope you get to work longer covering this than, you know, than shorter, obviously, looking for a long, long run as they get cranked up. So let's talk about this team and what we did see. We were there last week in the arena doing a show. We were there the week prior to that. So we spent some time in there watching these inter-squad scrimmages, just watching training camp and seeing some of the combinations. So let's start with some things that stood out. The second line looked very good. Very good. Matt Duchene centering that second line. Granlund, who went in hot already. He was playing well under new head coach John Hines. And Kyle Turris getting moved up there and slid over to the wing. Got to be honest, there were several days that line really, really stood out in some of those scrimmages.
I could not agree more. I think the Duchene, Granlund, Turris line is something to watch going forward. Because if the opponents, in this case Dallas exhibition, and then Arizona in the first play-in round, if you will, that if those teams try to take away the Johansson, Arvidsson, Forsberg line, which we all know can be dangerous, not all of them were at their best during the regular season, admittedly, but we all know they have chemistry together, they have a history of that, they all put up great numbers typically, and so if they decide to shut down that first line and you put Duchene, Granlund, and Turris out there, and then they go, and they can find some sort of gel, which they look like they were forming really well, like you mentioned, Darren. If they can find that next gear, then the opponent will be in trouble. And then if the Grimaldi-Smith-Bonino line returns to their form of the regular season, then the opponents are going to be in big, big trouble because then you have a wave of attack coming. And we've seen what Colton Sissons and, you know, guys like that. Yes, they're fourth-line guys at this point. But we've seen Colton Sissons have the biggest game of his life in the playoffs, right, back in during the Stanley Cup run. So you have guys that can contribute on other lines. So, but again, I think it all rests on whether Johansson is the X factor, like you're going to read about on thegamenashville.com tomorrow, and whether the Turris, Granlund, Duchene line can show as impressive as they are in camp. I think if those two things happen, it's going to – the sky's the limit for this team, in my opinion.
You know, with Kelly Yarncroke's experience and what you just mentioned, Colton Sissons' experience, they're going to be on that fourth line. Right now, it looks like it's going to be also the other guy with lots of experience in Austin Watson. But you've got some young guys that they really like and young guys that really have stood out and young guys that you can feel comfortable with. But I don't think at least – to start, and that's where I'm going with this, that they will start. Obviously, things happen, whether it's injury or a positive test. I mean, things can happen in the course of this, but you feel comfortable that it is going to be Austin Watson and guys like Yakov Trenin and Colin Blackwell, who they like. They're probably first-up subs, will probably just be, as I said, first-up subs and not in the lineup to start.
I actually think it could go both ways. Maybe the first game, I think you put out your experienced lineup and then kind of play it by ear after that. But with meaning Austin Watson would be the guy on the fourth line there in game one. But I will point your attention to the fact that Arizona is not an overly goony team. I mean, their highest penalty minute guy is Jacob Chikrin in the defense. It's only got 38 penalty minutes. I mean, that's not a whole lot. That's 63 games. He didn't have an abbreviated season or anything. And that's their leader, right? That's their leading penalty minute guy. So they don't have a whole lot of thugginess in them, if you will. And so for that, but if they were playing Dallas, for example, I could see you want a big, heavy Austin Watson guy in there. But I would not put it past them at all that, okay, you know, Arizona's more skilled. and they're going to attack him with skill. And so you put Trennan and Blackwell, two guys, by the way, who really looked like they belonged for the most part when they were in the lineup in the regular season. Yes,
they
had
productive.
Their pickups for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they were productive, and they looked like they fit. And so it wouldn't surprise me at all if one of those two guys, probably Blackwell, checks into the lineup during the Arizona series, and then, again, maybe not in game one, like I said, there's no room for error, at a best of five, but certainly after game one, if Blackwell checks in the rest of the series, and then when they see the next opponent, if it's a heavier opponent or a team that likes to play physical, then maybe you go back to Austin Watson.
So with that being said, and I agree with you on the Coyotes, you don't look for it to be a muck it up, that's not their style. It's not going to feel like the 2017 run whenever you got to the second, third rounds and you knew the Blues and the Ducks, it was going to be a totally different series than the Blackhawks. And that played out that way, obviously. So I agree with you on that. So with that being said, then are you leaning toward Ham, Houston, Weber as the third D pairing first up, or do you go with when the pause hit the third D pairing that was out there on the ice, not just one game, but had been out there for a little bit in Tenorti and Holzer?
Well, I'm going to split it, actually. I think Hamus has the experience you need if you're the Predators, and I like what he brings. And Weber, of course, he's a puck-moving guy when necessary. But the goal of the third pairing, Darren, as we've said for, 2 years now, maybe more, the goal of the third pairing for the Predators is to not be a defensive liability. If the third pairing can go out there for 8 minutes a game or whatever the number is and not be a defensive liability, then they put themselves in the best position to win. And Holzer, I think, does that, and I think Hamus can do that. I did not like Tenorti's camp. I'll just be very honest. I thought he played great for his level, for sure, towards the end of the actual regular season before the pause. He came on. He scored a goal. He looked good in a couple other sequences. He's not a top four defenseman in the NHL by any means. But for what he was, he was serviceable. He was fine, and that's all you can really ask for. Again, for the third pairing, don't be a liability. But in camp, I just didn't like how he was moving. I didn't like some of the decisions he made. Again, there are drills and scrimmages. I get it, but that's all I have to work on. I'm not in the locker room. I'm not doing all the stuff with the team. I am seeing what the media is allowed to see in the sessions, and I just did not like Tenorti. So I would put Tenorti dead last on the depth chart for me. I like what Holzer brings. I think Weber has an offensive side to him, meaning even if he doesn't impact the score sheet, he can move the puck. He's light on his feet, that kind of thing. But I think Hamus and Holzer, I think, is the way to go, at least at first, and then you kind of see from there.
It's interesting because they really like Tenorti. There's no doubt about it. He played a lot.
And that's why I was watching him. Yep. That's why I was watching him. But every single time I did, most of the time I did, I just noticed things that I was like, well, that was questionable. Ooh, shouldn't do that. Oh, that was dangerous. Putting pucks in. It's weird. So just my own personal call, I would put Snorty last.
All right. Last but certainly not least, let's end with who will be in between the pipes. Where do you think this is headed? John Hines, who's going to be in there game one?
All right, everybody. So I knew he was going to ask this, so I did some. I have some notes. I'll be very quick. Saros is 12-5-0 under Coach Hines, and Rene is 4-6-1 under Coach Hines. So and normally I would say, matter of fact, I think I was on SiriusXM a couple weeks ago, and I said my answer was, I think you start with Rene in game one with a short leash because he's earned the right to have that opportunity, but he has a short leash because Saros earned the right to be the starter when Hines took over. That was just very clear and evident to me. I will say, however, after watching a camp, I thought Saros was the stronger goaltender in camp from what I could see at camp. So I will put Saros as the starter of game one.
That is exactly, by the way, exactly how I viewed it. I really thought that Pekka would be his experience. 89 career postseason starts would probably get him the first crack at it and would get the nod for game one. But after watching camp, and the thing is, neither one of us know how much stock they put into camp.
Right.
We don't know how much stock they put into inter-squad scrimmage, but if you're sitting there watching it like I did, and when you were there watching it, My eyes told me it was pretty clear that Saros looked like he had a better camp. I mean, I don't really think there was any debate about that. Once again, don't know how much stock they're putting into that. It may be virtually none for all we know. But if you're just, you know, I thought that going into it, I thought, well, Pekka will probably get and deserve the first nod with all of his experience in postseason play. But coming away out of camp, I'm thinking, well, if they do put stock into him, because that's all you have after a 4-plus-month pause, is what you see out there on the ice in practice slash camp and slash scrimmages. To me, if that's all you have and they're going to weigh that a little bit or a lot, then to me, it's probably going to be 74. I've changed my mind, I guess. Since camp is what
yes,
I'm saying.
I've
it
changed,
sounds
I've
like you have
mine
to.
As well. Changed yeah. mine as well.
Jeremy, good stuff. Thanks for the visit, as always, and hope to talk to you soon.
Yep, hope we got a couple more months of this, Darren, before I walk away into the sunset, hopefully with some sort of banner raising come whenever the season starts.
That would be great. Anything new up on GameNashville.com or anything new coming?
Yes, coming. Tomorrow there will be – I'm doing three X-Factor stories. I was going to do one gigantic one, and as I was writing it, I was like, this is just stupid. So I'm going to do three. The first one will be out tomorrow. The next one will be out Wednesday. And then, of course, the final one will preview the game against the Dallas Stars, the exhibition game.
All right. Good stuff, Jeremy. Thanks as always.
Thanks, guys.
Jeremy K. Gover, good stuff from him. You just heard it. GameNashville.com tomorrow. Check it out. There's an interesting college football proposal we'll tell you about on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Just around the corner, our conversation with Pierre McGuire. You're going to want to hear this, hockey fans. Really good stuff. He will be there in Edmonton. He will be there at the Hub Cities. In between the benches, actually in Toronto, I think, is what he told us. You're going to want to hear this conversation with Pierre just around the corner. Elijah, I was just looking at, I teased a college football proposal, and I saw Stuart Mandel tweet this out in the last 15 minutes. A proposed college football bubble by conference is being discussed. Each team will get their own hotel. They would need 4 to 5 college/high school stadiums. But currently, right now, this is being discussed, but I don't see any chance of this happening. ACC would be in Charlotte. The Big Ten would be in Indianapolis. The Big 12 in Dallas. The Pac-12 in Seattle. And because they're saying that Vegas and Los Angeles would be too risky, and the SEC would be in Atlanta.
I mean, if it does sound far-fetched, but in reality, this might be the only chance that we are able to contain it a little bit, because we're already – like the MLB is a prime example. I mean, you can only control so many moving variables – and the leagues that are having success so far here in America in terms of bringing sports back is the NBA, and I think the NHL will be fine considering their test numbers right now, and they're bringing all the athletes in with no positive tests. It would be the best way. I feel like it would work, because like with college athletics too, there's so many more moving parts than there is with the MLB because of student interactions with the athletes. I mean, you're can't really limit the amount of people that these student athletes interact with on a daily basis. I mean, a little late, I guess, to propose this now. I like the idea, but it's going to be a logistics nightmare getting that settled from now until what, camp starts?
Yeah, I have a hard time believing. Look, I know this is, dare I say, a knee-jerk reaction to what's going on with Major League Baseball, because this does have to scare the NFL and college football, because the MLB is not in a bubble situation. It's not in a hub city. It's not in a controlled, so-called controlled environment. And so these teams are playing games at different venues. They're traveling. And you know, I'm sure college football is trying to toss everything around. They're sitting back and watching. But logistically, I don't know how in the world you can make this happen. Like how – so what about – they are student athletes. So
yeah.
What about the school part? What do you, I mean, I get it virtual. So how do you – I don't know. I just can't imagine that is actually possible. And, oh, by the way, so that would be for what, 4 months?
Yeah. I mean, it's a long time to kind of keep these guys sequestered.
In a hotel, right.
Yeah, because you're going to have to monitor all their movements too. Like the reason the NBA is working so well is because these guys aren't allowed to leave like the campus of Disney World, and you're able to control where these guys go, with the exception of like Lou Williams. But then even then, they have protocol in place to manage something like that. And there's just too many extenuating circumstances of a college athlete or things that go on in the life of a college athlete to control everything. So I like the idea because the idea could minimize risk, but you got to be realistic in terms of the length and exactly how they're going to be able to pull something like that off on such short notice, too. I mean, if we were talking about this in February or March, then like maybe we could figure, we had more time to figure something out. You have the luxury of time, but they don't necessarily have that right now.
I would give that a 2% chance or less of actually happening. But it was just something to throw out there. You know, I think they're trying to figure out anything and everything to get this season in the fall. And Major League Baseball has probably scared a lot of people that don't have the controlled environment to death, because they're trying to make this happen. And, you know, there's just no way of knowing whether you can pull it off or not. So just thought we'd at least pass along. I don't think it has any chance of happening, but thought we would at least pass it on. We will come back and wrap up today's show with a very good hockey conversation with Pierre McGuire. NBC Sports, that is next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren, Donnick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Monday afternoon. We bring in Pierre McGuire. In Between the Benches, NBC Sports. Pierre, how you doing?
Darren, Willie, I'm doing fantastic. I'm about 120 miles north of Montreal, where I grew up in the woods in Mont-Tremblant, Quebec, and quarantining here. I've got 4 more days left in a 2-week quarantine, and then I fly to Edmonton on Monday.
Is this where you've been since the entire pause in mid-March?
Oh, no. I was in Connecticut, where I live most of the year, even though I'm on the road most of the year, actually, and training a bunch of kids, giving stuff back to the game of hockey up in Boston for about 3.5 months. So most of my time was spent between Connecticut and Massachusetts, and I was mostly on the ice, believe it or not, so it was really good. I really enjoyed it, working with a lot of college players and some minor league pro players and some really top-end kids that are eligible for the draft this coming October, which should have happened in June. So there you go.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. What did you think of yesterday? So we broke it, after the first hour of the show, the Seattle Kraken. What do you think?
Well, you know, obviously the Pacific Ocean really matters to them, especially in the Pacific Northwest. You know, you got the Vancouver Canucks, and their logo is of the big orca whale. And the Kraken is kind of a neat thing. It's a mythological sea animal, and I think it kind of speaks to the aggressive nature that they want to have. I know their general manager really well, Ronnie Francis. I sit on the Hockey Hall of Fame selection committee with him, and I also coached him in 91 and 92 when the Pittsburgh Penguins won the Stanley Cup. So I've known Ronnie a long time. I have a lot of respect for him. And one of the things I know about their ownership group and the people running it, led by Todd Lazicki, they are really thorough in terms of their approach, and I have to think that they had a lot of sampling done before they actually picked that name. So I love the color scheme. I love the logos. I think it's going to work really well. I think hockey's going to be fantastically successful in Seattle.
Yeah. As we've talked a lot, Pierre, at least 4+ months, none of us have a clue what's about to happen on August the 1st. Of course, the Predators will play on August the 2nd. But, to have these circumstances and, you know, one hand, you get a lot of teams fully healthy. But on the other hand, you know, you've had a pause for 4+ months, and now you pick up where you left off, and it's, oh, by the way, the playoffs, and it's meaningful. How do you think, without any of us knowing, how do you think it's all going to play out in your mind?
I think the teams that have really good internal leadership, they'll be teams that have a bit of an advantage. It's going to be so different without crowd noise.
Yeah, and
it's going to be so different for the players because I work between the benches. That's what I'm going to be doing in Edmonton. So that's going to be a totally foreign concept for me. I mean, I've been in the NHL since 1990, and to think it, you know, you're going to be in a building and there's not going to be any noise except for the skates cutting into the ice or slap shots going off goal posts or going wide off the boards or bodies being racked into the glass. That's about it. I mean, you're not going to have any crowd noise at all. So I think teams that have really good leadership, there'll be teams that have a bit of an advantage. And I think teams that have veteran players that took care of themselves and are highly explosive offensively, I think those teams will have advantages. I think teams that have young players that maybe didn't take it as seriously during the pause or teams that are younger that maybe don't have great leadership, I think they might have a bit of a problem.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. As you're right. You've always had that perspective in between the benches, so you're down there. But you hear a lot of stuff. You got a bench to your right, a bench to your left, and you got a whole lot of people behind you, behind the glass. And so, you know, I said at the beginning of this interview that the last 3 days we've been at Bridgestone Arena doing our show, and obviously just a handful of media in there. So quiet, empty arena. And they've had inter-squad scrimmage the last couple of days, and we've been up in the broadcast booth, which is high atop Bridgestone Arena, and the head official, because they had officials the last 2 days, was Scotty Nichol. So the reason I'm bringing that up is when he made
that
a call,
funny.
Pierre, you're going to get a kick out of this. We could hear the chatter amongst the players just giving it to him whenever he made a call. The point is, that is going to be weird, and I wonder how much of that is going to get out over the broadcast, how we were high atop in the arena, and we could hear all the chatter and them just giving it to him every time he blew his whistle.
It's one of the most underappreciated things in the National Hockey League for the fans in the building, because it's so loud in the building, is how loud the players communicate at ice level. And, you know, they make their mouths very important. Communicating with teammates when there's pressure on, or goalies communicating with the defense to tell them where the outlets are, because things happen so fast. It's amazing. And so I think that'll be one of the cool parts about it, is the fans at home will be able to hear a lot of that ancillary noise that maybe they're not used to hearing. So I think that's really cool. Scotty Nichol, even though he's not overly large, was about as rough and tough a customer, pound for pound, over the entire length of his career. I have a ton of respect for Scotty and the way he carried himself all those years that he played in the league. Tremendous hockey guy. And I wish I could have seen him officiating, because he used to really give it to the officials. So it would have been fun to watch him officiate.
So that was maybe a little karma, maybe coming back his way now that he's on the other side. Well, the good news is, you know, that was more of the veteran guys, because now that he's the general manager of the Milwaukee Admirals, the younger guys were calling him sir. I don't think they were giving him any grief.
Oh, that's just a great story. You know, the thing again, Nashville's of one of these teams. If they can engage their defense into the offense, which is really one of the organizational strengths of the Predators, if they can do that, I think that's going to help them a ton. And again, a lot of that comes down to conditioning, so it depends on how well the guys took care of themselves in the offseason. You know, you've got one of the preeminent defensemen in the league in Roman Josi there. He's just so darn good at manufacturing offense from the back end. Ryan Ellis is another one of those guys that's so darn good. Matthias Ekholm, just another. So, you know, the strength of the team is really offense from the defense. And if they're able to do that, I think that gives them a subtle little advantage going into their series with Arizona.
Because this qualifying round is a five-game series, Pierre, we're so used to seven-game long, grueling series. How do you think these teams are going to go about the shorter series? Is strategy a little bit different with that being said?
You know, that's a great question. I think from all my coaching years, the one thing we used to tell our teams before every playoff series was discipline. But I think in this case, more than ever, you can't get behind the eight ball early in games. You can't make mistakes because they're self-inflicted. So if you take bad penalties and the other team capitalizes, it's going to be really hard to get back into games. So I think stressing the discipline aspect of the game is going to be really important. And that's why I think veteran teams that have been through this a lot, they kind of understand how to manage the moment and massage it a little bit. But it would be interesting as well to see how the officials call games early on, because I do think if teams are super aggressive and try to exploit the other team quickly and take penalties because of that, they could be in trouble. But if the referees give them a little bit longer rope to run with, it could be very, very interesting, very interesting.
We're talking with Pierre McGuire from NBC Sports. He'll be on hand, and he will be in Edmonton calling the games in the Western Conference, which, of course, is of interest to the Predator fans. And, Pierre, I know some of the details are coming out of what the broadcasts are going to look like. Extra cameras, I think, some of the ways to enhance for all the viewers that will be watching this very intently.
Yeah, there are going to be about 10 to 12 more cameras in the building compared to what we usually have. And a lot of them are going to be in positions where fans usually sit. So you can't put those cameras in when the buildings are full of fans. So that's going to be an interesting thing for the producers and the directors to work in terms of the angles that they utilize to show different phases or facets of the game. So I think that's going to be really interesting for the fans. Obviously, the sound that we had talked about, I think, is going to be a really important part of it. And again, I just think that if the tempo, usually when you have this kind of a situation, there are lots of mistakes that happen, and that leads to really good hockey. People like to see mistakes because it leads to great offensive scoring chances. So I think that could be part of it early on, too, is the amount of mistakes that are made. If those mistakes happen and they're prominent, that's going to lead to some unbelievable end-to-end action.
We've had some great debates over that part of it, Pierre, with people like Hal Gill and Chris Mason and some of the analysts for the Predators, is if the game is going to look a little bit more like it would in October, where maybe there are a few more mistakes, maybe a few more penalties, and would that lead to a higher scoring game than you might see otherwise in the in those first few playoff games?
Yeah, it'd be interesting to hear from Hal's perspective as a defenseman, how he would envision it, because he was a big guy, and it usually takes guys just a little bit longer to get going. Once the season starts, they're just at a little a disadvantage. And in terms of the goalies, I'd love to hear what Chris would have to say. I personally, just again from my experience, that the goalies might have a tinge of an advantage early on, only because they don't need ice all the time to be practicing. They can work under flexibility. They can work on their core strength. They can work on their conditioning levels without being on the ice. So more times than not, early on, the goalie's got a bit of an advantage over the offensive players. And I think the defensemen have a little bit of a disadvantage. So it would be really interesting to hear what both of them would have to say. But I do think we'll see probably a few more older goalies because the defense is going to, I think, have a tough time with how the speed of the forwards is going to be.
Pierre, Taylor Hall, of course, is going to be a very, very important guy in this series. And, of course, he's a highly sought-after potential free agent. We know that the Coyotes would love to have him stick around. What kind of dynamic, if anything, does that create in a short series like this?
He's one of the better game-breakers in the league. The problem with Taylor is there's been this lack of consistency over the course of his career, and part of it's been because he hasn't been on very good teams. And so teams really focus in on him, and they take him away as a weapon. Because there are not a lot of other weapons for them to worry about. And so that creates a bit of a problem. But Taylor's always been a highly explosive offensive game-breaking type of a player. In terms of the potential to be an unrestricted free agent, he didn't finish the season extremely well with Arizona. Before we went to the pause, he was struggling. The team was kind of struggling too. So this is kind of a showcase cinema for him, really, when you think about it. And I'd have to think that he'd want to really take advantage of this opportunity. But the one thing that I know from having done so many games of the Nashville Predators, it's hard to manufacture a lot of chances against them. It's really hard. I mean, the defense is really strong. They're extremely well coached. They play big at the point of attack. They transition the puck out of their own zone so well, it's hard to establish a forecheck. And so that's one of the things, a player like Taylor Hall, it's not always that easy when you're playing against a stingy team like Nashville defensively.
No doubt about that. It's going to be really something to watch. And, Pierre, I'm curious, what is your schedule going to be like? I know there's three games a day in Edmonton, but I cannot wait just as a hockey fan, for example, the day before the Predators play their first game, we've got five games to sit back and just watch all day like we would watch the NCAA basketball tournament. It's going to be awesome. How many games are you doing each day? What's your schedule going to be like?
The first 2 days I have five games. So I've got two the first day, and I've got three the second.
Got to hydrate, right? Get that water in there.
Yeah, 100%. You know, it's interesting. I talked to a very good friend of mine who's been in the league over 30 years. When I was coaching Hartford, he worked for our team, Johnny Forsland, who's going to be doing a ton of games for NBC. He's up in Toronto right now, in the pod in Toronto. And he got in there yesterday, and he says it's completely different than anything you've ever experienced over the course of your career. There are fences around the hotels. Everything is cordoned off. The players are in for a rude, awakening. It's completely different than anything they're used to experiencing over the course of their careers. Road trips are different because they're different restaurants for you to go to. You usually stay in the same hotel, but you're not, forced to stay in your room for the first 4 days that you get there. I mean, this is going to be a very, very different experience for everybody that's involved in this. Really different.
Wow. Can't wait. Well, there's going to be long days, but fun days. For you.
Oh, my
gosh.
This is not heavy lifting. I mean, this is an amazing opportunity to help grow the game and sell the game. And you know what? I respect it. The one thing I'll say, I've been in the league a long time. Between playing, coaching, and broadcasting, it's been a long time, almost 33 years. And the one thing I would tell you that really mattered to me a lot during this offseason, or the pause, I guess, was how the National Hockey League Players Association and the NHL got together to extend the collective bargaining agreement without having all kinds of nasty public discussion. I thought the maturity on both sides was phenomenal. They struck a deal that I think benefits both sides, but it really helped stabilize the game. And the biggest thing is they found a way to accommodate one another to get back and try to have a finish to the season. I respect the players, the coaches, the GMs, the owners so much for having done this. It's phenomenal what they've done. And I, again, being part of the product and going into the pod, I can tell you, the levels of security that they've gone through with everybody that has to be, where you're a player, coach, broadcaster, management person, it's been unbelievable. I'm way deep in the woods here in Quebec right now, in northern Quebec, and a lady came to give me a COVID test today. I can't get on the plane Monday unless I have a COVID test today. So I had one this morning at 9 o'clock, and they drove from Montreal, which is about an hour and 20 minutes away, to come up and give me that test. So it just shows you how thorough they're being with everybody.
Wow. Amen to that. Really good stuff as always. You continue to be safe. Enjoy the hub, and hopefully we'll get to talk to you down the road. Thanks, Pierre.
Oh, I'll talk to you guys anytime. It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on. And please be safe, everybody, and enjoy the NHL and NBC. It's going to be a wild ride to the finish.
We cannot wait.
April, August 1st. We cannot wait either. Take care.
All right. Thank you. That is Pierre McGuire, NBC Sports. Always good to talk to Pierre McGuire, NBC Sports. Always a good conversation, and we thank him for joining us. That will do it for our show today here on this Monday. You have a great rest of your day. Be safe, and we will be back with you tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.